Week is Parashas Kisavoy, the parasha that leads into the Nehaslichos. Okay, there are two parashios. There are two parashios of the Torah that begin with the word V'hoya. What are the two parashios that begin with the word V'hoya? Parashas Kisavoy, V'hoya Kisavoy El Aretz. And the second parasha, Ramayevsky, you only have 55. I give you 54 seconds. Akef. V'hoya Akef Tishmu'un is the other parasha. What is the significance that both of these parashas begin with the word V'hoya? Well, Akef is the heel. And Rashi there tells us, Akef, the mitzvah she'odom dosh be'akevav. Mitzvahs that a person trembles upon, things that to a person seem to be very insignificant. Bikurim represents from the most significant mitzvos, because it's called reishis. The lakachta me reishis pri hu adama. Reishis comes from the word derosh. The rosh is the head, and it's a very significant mitzvah. We have a very nice elaboration. We go through Jewish history, Arami Oyved Avi. The tenor, the mizbech, the mitzvah become really captures so many things. Eretz Yisrael, you come to Eretz Yisrael, you inherit it. Asher noisein l'cha nachalo v'rishto v'yoshavtaba. And then when the fruit begins to blossom, you take a blade of grass, you tie it around, you wait until it develops, and then you bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Kohen, and you wave it, you give him a matana, and you ask Hashem for a brocha, and there's a vidui. I mean, it's awesome how many things, how many different concepts it brings together. And that's why it's called Mereshis. The word the Torah chooses to open up the sugya, Mereshis Pri Ho'adamah. The fruit is always a blessing. It's Miloshon Roish. The word V'hoya, Chazal tell us, always connotes Simcha. Ein V'hoya Ela Simcha. Vayihi is Loshon Tsar, V'hoya is Loshon Simcha. And the significance of these, the fact that both of these parshios begin with the word V'hoya, is to teach us is that the Simcha, true Simcha in life comes when you take seriously the word of Hashem from the Okev to the Rosh, from the beginning to the end, from the most, what would appear to be the most insignificant part of Yadus to the most significant, from the Okev, the Hoye Ekev Tishmun, to the Reishis Pri Hu Adama, from one extreme to the other extreme. This is what will bring a person Lidei Simcha. This parasha is all about Simcha. The end of the parasha begins with Simcha, and the parasha ends with Simcha. The parasha Bikur begins with Bikurim, and the pasuk says V'somachta V'chol Hatoif Asher Nosan Lucha Hashem Lokechu Leveisech Hatov Yaldi V'Gersher B'Kirbecha. And the end of the parasha, when we learn about the Toichacha, pasuk says, why is there a Toichacha Tachas Asher Lo Yavadeta Es Hashem Lokecha B'Simcha U'V'Tuv Leivav Meiroiv Kol. So we have Simcha in the beginning of the parasha, Simcha at the end of the parasha, and this is the avoda that we focus on when we go into the Yimei Harachamim, the Yimei Hadin. Okay, another quick idea, just the point I want to mention, the very important Ramban. The Ramban says that this week's parash Kisavo, in one sense, is the end of the Torah. Why do we say that it is the end of the Torah? Because the mitzvah Bikurim is the last major mitzvah, or the Ramban says this, the last mitzvah of the Torah. Even though in the next three parshios, Nitzan, Vayelech, Hazim, V'Zayis HaBracha, we learn about the mitzvah of Teshuvah, and we learn about the mitzvah of Hakel, and the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah, the commentators explain that when the Ramban made this statement in this week's parasha, that these are the last mitzvahs, those mitzvahs are in a different category. Those are mitzvahs which are general mitzvahs. Teshuvah is a general concept that I'm giving you the mitzvos, and it's part of the packaging. Hakel is when Moshe Rabbeinu just wants to remind Klal Yisrael. You read over the Mishnah Torah, you read over the entire Torah. Ksiva Sefer Torah is also, it's packaging. The next three mitzvos of Parshas Nitzav, Vayelech, Hazin, V'Sabrocha are the packaging of the other 210 mitzvos. 610 mitzvos. This parsha, so in that sense, it is something very significant for us, that it's just like we all appreciate what it means, Simchas Torah. We all appreciate what it means, a siyum sechta. We all appreciate what it means to make a chnasa sefer Torah. This week, in one respect, is a very great simcha where we've come to the end of the mitzvahs, the major mitzvahs of the Torah. And that's why Parash Kesav, of course, is the lead into the new year, when we begin Slichos, Nusach Ashkenaz, we begin Slichos usually right after Kisavoy, Mitzvah Shabbos, Parshas Kisavoy, because after we conclude with Kisavoy, it's now a new Haschalah. So it's always a very great moment, a very significant moment when you come to the end of something to reflect, to give shevach v'chaydah to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that we have survived. It's nothing to take for granted. Give shevach l'Hakadosh Baruch Hu, called neshima v'neshima, for every breath a person takes, that we've made it to this point in time where we were zoicheh to go from the beginning of the Torah, from Bereishis Bara Elokim, all the way to the last mitzvah in the Torah according to the Ramban, which is Bikurim, which is called Mereishis Pri Ho Adama. With Baruch Hashem, we were zoicheh to make it through the entire cycle. It's a time to reflect, to take note, and to take inventory of where we're holding in life, and of course to give shevach v'chaydah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that He's taken us Mereishis Hashana, from the beginning of the year until Achres Shana, Mereishis, and the Achres Hashana, it's interesting, it's like a continuous infinite cycle. Mereishis Hashana at Achres Hashana. And what is the word the Torah uses for the Achres Hashana, the last day of the year? Anoch another Bereishis. Mereishis Pri Ho Adama. The cycle begins again. It's not the end, it's just the beginning. We go from the beginning to the end, and the end is another Reishis. To Hadron Aloch, may we return to you, may we cycle once again through to be mashlim, another cycle of the mitzvah of the Torah. Okay, that's a point from the Ramban. Very sadistic Ramban. Rambans are unbelievable. Rambans, we should really spend some time learning the Ikar Rambans. The sadist Ramban is the sadist of Yadus. Okay, let's now go to another idea about why is the mitzvah Bikurim such a significant mitzvah? What is it? There are so many different concepts in the mitzvah Bikurim. Eretz Yisrael, okay, that's probably the major theme. You finally, the hashlam of coming to Eretz Yisrael. You have the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim. There's one thing I want to pick up on, and that is what it says here. The law, you take the basket, and you bring the basket of Vasa El HaKohen Asher Yihyeh Bayamim HaHem. You come to the Kohen that is there at that point in time. And Rashi says, what does it mean Bayamim HaHem? Ein Lecha El HaKohen Shebiyamecha. Whoever is there, all the Farshim is the question, I mean, Bishlam, when dealing with a Dayan, dealing with a Shoifet, so then it would be, you'll say, listen, the Dayanim that you don't have today, you don't have a Chaim Oizer, you don't have a Chazanish, so you go to your local rabbi. Okay, so we understand why it would be necessary to say that you go to the Kohen, the Shoifet, Asher Yihyeh Bayam Mohem. But yet Rashi, on that pasuk there, when you go to the Shoifet, Asher Yihyeh Bayam Mohem, it doesn't say this. It only says Bayam Mohem when you go to the Kohen. What's the difference? When you give the fruit to the Kohen, it's this Kohen, that Kohen. The answer is, obviously, we don't really appreciate what Bikurim is all about. When you go, like, we finished learning in Koheles. When you go to the Kohen and you give the Bikurim, it's a religious experience. The Kohen's going to have a message for you. When you come to him and you give him the fruit, and he puts your hand underneath your hand and he waves the fruit with you, there's an experience. There is a conversation. And the Kohen is going to ask you, where are you holding in life? What's doing with you? He's going to give you Musar. And the Balei Musar of the previous generations, the Melamdim, the Madrichim, the Mechanchim of the previous generations certainly are not, of this generation certainly don't compare to what we had in the previous generations. But yet the Pasuk says no, when you go and you bring Bikurim and you interact and you go to the Shiurim, you learn, as the Targum that we just finished learning in Kohela says, you learn the Torah, the Ulfat, from the Kohanim and the Chochmah from the Kohanim. Don't think, what does this Kohen already know? What can the Kohanim of this generation really teach me? They're nothing relative to the Kohanim of the previous generations. The Pasuk here says, don't do that. The Mitzvah Bikurim says to take the present very seriously. Uvaso el hakohen asher yihye bayomim ohen. The present is everything. The message that the Kohen of this generation has for you is just as significant as what Avraham Avinu would have to tell you. Everyone today, they're running to the kever of the Chofetz Chaim. It's a very good thing. But the Chofetz Chaim, there are living Gedolim you can run to. The Chofetz Chaim, Zuchuso Yogin Oleinu. But Uvaso El HaKoyhein Asher Yihye Bayomim Hoheim. The Chofetz Chaim was the Kohen HaGodol, and not Chas V'Sholem belittling. Mipinu Anu Choyim. But the Torah says you have to focus now on the present, and you should not belittle what you have now. But yet the Pasuk goes on to say, what do you do when you come to the Kohanim? You begin to relate Jewish history. Arami Yovi Ravi. And the Gis of Yamarta. You go through the entire history and you talk about, if you're going to reflect upon the history, obviously it's going to come to mind that this generation is nothing compared to the greatness of the previous generations. But that is exactly the double message of Bikurim. It is to bridge the past with the present. Bikurim has two essential components. Bayomim hohem uvaso el hakohen asher yihye bayomim hohem. Number two, think about the past. Remember the past. Arami oviravi vayir mitzrayim vayogasham vayiriros and hamitzrim, and you brought us. We cried out to you. Vayotzina shem mitzrayim yotchazaka vayivina malkum azeh viato hine hidesi. This, in essence, is what the mitzvah of Bikurim is all about. It's the past and the present. To bridge the gap between the past and the present, appreciate the present, but don't lose focus of your heritage, that of what you've had. Everything that you have today is all built upon a foundation of everything that has been given to us from our predecessors in the past. I don't think so. I think Ato Uveitzach, the Pasuk concludes that it's done as a family. Your entire family. So it would appear that the Rosh Habayis, the father, the Rosh Habayis.
The woman owns the property. She's the one who gets sold
on. I don't know the answer. I don't know. If she's the sole owner, does she bring Bikurim? How are you going to do? How are you going to do the waving? It's going to be Nagia. The Kohen is going to put his hands underneath. What? Okay, Enachanami. I don't know. Possibly bigger Chatzitza. It could be. I don't know the answer. Okay, now let's just some short ha'aras. I saw a beautiful word from Rabbi Pelkowitz in his sefer called Table Talk. Rabbi Pelkowitz was the Rav in the White Shul for many, many years. He should be well. He's a zaken, and he put out a book on some ideas. So he asked the question. The famous Chazal tells us that when you bring a basket, there's a difference between the poor and the rich. If a person is wealthy, he brings his bikurim in a gold basket. If one is poor, he brings his bikurim in a wicker basket. The Gemara says, what? And the Gemara says that the rich, they present the fruits to the Kohanim, and the Kohen gives back the basket to the rich man. But the Oni does not get back his basket. The Oni presents the Bikurim with the basket, and the Kohen keeps the basket. Chazal comment on this fact, on this halacha, Boser Anyo Ozal Aniyusa, that the poor get poorer. It's bad enough the poor have to give away from their fruit, but they also have to give away the basket. The rich only give away fruit, but they get back the basket. So why is that so? Why indeed is this correct, that the poor man should not get back his basket? So before I tell you Rabbi Pelkowitz, I saw a very interesting vart. I remember where I saw this, but what is it? We don't want to embarrass the poor man. The rich typically bring beautiful, exquisite, delicious fruit. Someone is very wealthy, he has a good field. Idius, Sheba Idius. He lives on a high quality piece of land. It's fertile, it's well cared for, and it produces very grade A plus fruit. So when you come to the Beis HaMikdash and everyone is standing around and everyone observes that this wealthy individual presents the coin with the Bikurim, he gives, it's now time to go home, so I gotta take back my basket. He takes out, did you ever see such a cluster of grapes? Did you ever see dates, figs? He takes it out of the basket and presents it to the coin. Everyone watches and says, wow, look at those fruits, look at that gift. Awesome, incredible. The poor man lives, what could he afford to buy? He buys some piece of land right next to the train station. It's not well fertilized. The quality of the fruit is very poor, deficient. When he's going to take the fruit out of the basket and present it to the Kohen, he's going to be embarrassed. This is what you call a cluster of grapes. This is what you call a date and a fig. It's moss. It's shameful. So the Torah said, Chazal Darshan, don't embarrass the poor man. The poor man, when he gives his food, he gives the basket. The reason why we want him to give the basket is we don't want him to take out the food from the basket and have it exposed in front of all of the onlookers and should see the poor quality of his food relative to the rich man. So it's a preventive, it's a technique to prevent the poor man from bush. Okay, that's one very nice pshat. Rav Pelkowitz says his own idea. He says, because they want to give the poor man a bracha. They say to the poor man, you bring in here this here fruit in a wicker basket. Look at the guy next to you, the rich man. He's bringing fruit in a gold basket. And he's taking back his basket. You know what, poor man? I give you a bracha. Next year, you'll be just as wealthy as him. And next year, you're not going to bring it to me in the wicker basket. You have no use for it. Next year, you're going to present it to me in a gold basket. So by the Kohen taking the wicker basket from the Ani, he's basically saying is, you don't need this anymore. I'm giving you a bracha that you're going to be a rich man. I'm giving you a bracha. You're not going to need the basket anymore. So you might as well dispose of the basket here. He gave him the basket. It's like, you know, kinnis. Tisha B'Av is over. What do you do with the kinnis? You put the kinnis in Sheamus. Why do you put it in Sheamus? Next year, there's not going to be the Mashiach is coming. We don't need it anymore. So that's really what you do. That's really what you're doing to the poor man. You're telling him you don't need this anymore. Next year, you're going to be like the rich man. You're going to have a gold basket. So you might as well dispose of the basket right here and now. Okay.
Jamaica is going to sell disposable baskets.
Okay, now let me tell you another var. Now this var to me, I like this var. Okay, I don't know if you're gonna like it, but I like this. I find this to be something very a little bit different. The parasha begins with the words V'hoyoki Savo El Haaretz Asher Hashem Elokecha. The var is not complete. There's more. Oid Chazal Amoy. There has to be this idea has to be developed more. But I want to tell you half of the var. I don't know. I don't yet know the other half, but I believe there's more to this. We have to come figure out the second half, but let's at least throw out the basic, the foundation. The pasuk here begins, "V'yoki savay al aretz asher Hashem lokech nosin lucha nachla v'yirishta v'yoshav teba." Now, a professional balkore, by Mayevsky, will tell you the hardest part of laning is that there are many psukim in the Torah. There are what?
Rabbi.
I said, what did I say?
I don't lay for a long time.
What?
You said professional Al-Kareh.
Professional Al-Kareh, Harav Mayevsky, will tell you that the difficulty in laning is there are many psukim which are similar to one another. There are many expressions in the psukim that are similar to one another. The only difference is, in this parasha, the trop, the tamim are like this, and in this pasuk the tamim are like that. Sometimes you can have an entire pasuk and the only difference can be a word. And a professional Balkari, when he reads this pasuk, right away is reminded there's another pasuk that is kimat, 99% identical to this pasuk. But there is a small difference. And what pasuk are we referring to? The pasuk that begins the parsha of Melech, back in Parshas Shoftim. Parshas Shoftim, it says almost the same exact thing. Let's go back to Shoftim. Beginning of the sugya of the Melech. Okay, ki savo, here I am in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Dalet, ki savo el haaretz, asher Hashem elokecha nosein loch, virishto, viyoshavta bo. What does it say here? Vayo ki savo el haaretz, asher Hashem elokecha nosein lecha. Okay, there it says loch, here it says lecha. Why? Because there's one more word. Nachala virishto viyoshavta bo. The only difference between this pasuk, the beginning of this, it's a whole pasuk, there, so there are more words in the pasuk at the end of the pasuk, but the only difference between this pasuk and the beginning of the pasuk of the Melech is the word Nachala. Oh, you're right. You're right. I didn't pay attention. There was the Vahaya. Okay, you're right. You're a Vahaya. Correct. There's another difference. Here it begins with the word Vahaya. There it does not begin. But you're coming to Eretz Yisrael. You are arriving. Kisovo. You are inheriting the land, Virishta. You're dwelling in the land, Vyoshafta. Three things: arrival, inheritance, and dwelling. Kisavo begins the same thing. Kisavo, arrival. There is Virishta, inheritance, and there is Vyoshafta. But there's one more condition that is necessary in order to be chayiv in the midst of Bikurim, and that is the word Nachala. And Rashi picks up upon this, and Rashi says, "Magid shalo nischaivu bibikurim ad shekavshu esaretz v'cholkua." It has to be a nachala. You have to conquer the land. It's not enough just v'cholkua and to divide it. It's not just enough to come to the land and to live in the land. There has to be division.
When you sold your field, and there's 30 more years left for.
For Yovel? If you sell your field and there are 30 more years left to Yovel, okay, I don't know the deal. But the point is, Rashi does pick up upon it. Rashi seems to say that the word Nachla includes the fullest experience possible for the nation, which includes not just arriving, not just living, but conquering. And not just conquering. You know, you can live, you can be a squatter. It's not really my land. We don't have autonomy. We're subject to the rule. The king of Canaan, he lets us live in this section. No. Who's the boss? You're the boss. It's not enough to be the boss. You have to divide the land. The word Nachla appears to imply, to connote a complete experience of occupying the land. You come, conquer, divide, it's 100% yours. Okay, very nice. That's the focus of the, we know the word Nachla is critical when we contrast it with the other critical mitzvah of a melech. Well, I mean, what more do you want? You need a melech. But the melech does not have this requirement. It's very fascinating. A melech does not have a requirement that there should be Nachla. The only requirement the melech has is that there should be just arrival, and there shall be Yerusha and Yeshiva. It does not have that extra. The fact that here we have the word Nachla tells us there's something a lot more. Okay, let's put that on the side. Now, let's focus on the Imohos. We know that we have four Imohos, /6. We have Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, okay, and then the other Shvachas, Bilhah and Zilpah. Okay, let's focus on the four Imohos. What was their contribution to Klal Yisrael? Let's analyze in detail what they gave Klal Yisrael, besides the fact that they gave birth, of course. But Avraham, if you would have asked him early in the game, he would say, listen, I got two children, I got a Yishmael, and I got a Yitzchak. Let them both participate in the building of Klal Yisrael. That was his plan. Lu Yishmol Yichil Lefanecha. He said it beforeish. Lu Yishmol. He had no problem with allowing Yishmol to participate. Who is the one in Klal Yisrael that is responsible for the rejection of Yishmol? It is Sarah. Sarah witnessed Yishmol mitzachek. She said to Avram, "Goreish es ben huamo hazos ki lo yirash in bini im Yitzchak." Avraham said, "Nothing doing. I don't know what you're talking about. No way. Hashem has to come to Avram and say, Kol Asher Toimar Sarah Shema Bekoila. Even though it was Vayera Be'enof, it was evil in his eyes. It's clear as day. As far as Avram is concerned, Yishmael can participate. It is Sarah Imenu who is fully responsible for the rejection of Yishmael from Klal Yisrael. Period. No and, if, and buts. Okay, what was Rivka's contribution to Klal Yisrael? Rivka, as far as Yaakov Yitzchak was concerned, Esav can also participate. We don't even know that. It doesn't, as far as Yitzchak is concerned, it doesn't mean that Yaakov was out. You can't say that Yitzchak did not want Yaakov to participate in Klal Yisrael. Yaakov was the Ish Tam Yoshev Aholim. He was not going to be part of Klal Yisrael. Of course, I think we have a right to assume that Yitzchak would have allowed Yaakov in some capacity to be part of Klal Yisrael. But you got a brother. Listen, you got an older brother. Right, so you got an Esav, and Esav is my heir, and he's going to get the brachos, and he's going to take the lead, and you'll follow in his lead, and there'll be a Klal Yisrael, there'll be an Esav, there'll be a Yaakov. Who is the one that is responsible? V'ata b'ni shma b'koli is the one that said that no way Esav is out is Rivka. Rivka is the one that exposed we assume that she had an argument with at some point in time. There was some discussion between her and Yitzchak.
She had the nevuah,
but and it was her doing that caused Esav to be rejected. Okay, so this is clear as day. There's nothing to talk about. Now, the big question is, what about if Sarah, and if we see that Sarah and Rivka play a role in rejecting elements that are detrimental to Klal Yisrael, we have a right to assume that Rachel and Leah also somehow contributed to the makeup of Klal Yisrael in this way, besides the fact that they produced 12 children. Where do we find that they participated? The answer is they are the ones that are responsible for the rejection of Lavan. Lavan.
Yeah.
How do we know this? So let me go back to Parshas Vayetze. It's a very bizarre story, which requires, I told you, I'm telling you only a partial idea. Halo Nochios Anochi, we are foreigners. But it's more than that. He has to consult. The whole thing is extremely bizarre. All the Mepharshim, what is this? He goes, since when does a man consult with his wife? before he makes, okay, before he makes a major decision.
Right, you have nothing to say.
Mayor, you consult? Who consults? You come home, look what I got. I bought a car, right? I quit my job. Who consults with their wife? Okay, what's going on over here? It's such a long discussion. You would think this would be part of a medrash that Yaakov calls his wives to the field. I got to talk to you. Come out into the field. I got to have a discussion. I'm working here 20 years. Your father, he's a good for nothing. He's a ganav, he's a rasha. And I can't take this anymore. I got to go. Will you allow me to go? You give me permission to go? Will you come with me? The whole thing is extremely bizarre. But what does it say? This is what it says. He had this discussion with them, and they gave him full support. There's so many psukim. This goes on and on and on. On and on. Treif, he tells them what I did. I was so good. Treif, lo hevesi elecha. But what did he... What was the end? The end was... Here's the key point I want to point out. He calls them out and he has a discussion. And after all of these psukim, a whole page, a whole column, do we have a nachala b'veisavinu? Halo nochios nechshavnu lo ki michoranu vayoychol gam ocholas kaspenu. We have no. Their statement was chelek v'nachala. Okay, chelek v'nachala. The main word I want to focus on is the word on nachala. Rashi says, what is nachala? Chalukas haaretz. Okay, Rashi really focuses that what was the nachala? To divide. It's not enough just to come and to live and to settle. You gotta divide the land. That's when you chayiv in Bikurim. Chelek v'nachala. Ooh, this is big time stuff. What was their contribution? Their contribution was to recognize Lavan. There are three. What we take away from this is there are three forces that are out to get us. We only focus primarily. We're brainwashed is Yishmael and Esav, but that's a mistake. There are three forces. There is Yishmael who's out to destroy us. Mitzachek, He wants to take us down. There is an Esav, a Yistoim Esav, a Siakov Allah Bukhira, Halacha Biyodenu Esav Sone Yaakov, and then there's a Lavan. Arami Oived Ovi. Bikesh Lavan Lakar Esako. Who is the one? Why does Lavan, Bikesh Lavan Lakar Esako? Because where does that hatred come from? Bikesh Lavan, I mean, there are many interpretations. When did he want to do this? In the beginning, later, the end. But I am Panim Latorah, just like the hatred of Esav came because of the rejection, just like the hatred of Yishmael came because Vayigoresh Sora drove out. We can say Alderach Drush, you have to find Makaris for this, is that the, you know what the hatred of Lavan has, Bikesh Lavan, Lakares Hakol, it's because Yaakov took his two daughters and convinced his two daughters, he trained the two daughters, he had such a hashpa on his two daughters, where the two daughters said, Ein lanu chelek v'nachla b'vei savino. We're out of here. The Drashim says something extremely bizarre. Why did Yaakov want to give, this is a shocking marriage, I saw this yesterday, why did Yaakov want to give his two daughters to, did Lavan want to give his two daughters to Yaakov in marriage? Yaakov is such a tzaddik, this is what he wants as an Aden. He said it because he wanted, Yaakov was the ideal person to use for trofim. We know that Lavan was obsessed with trofim. What are trofim? Trofim are mummies, according to one interpretation. They're mummies, dead bodies. The head of a dead body. You take it's just like Dorei Shel Hamesim Oyvi Yidoini. So you would take a head, the head of a person who has spiritual connections, and you would use it to communicate with the dead or the future to find the future. So he figured Yaakov Avinu is the perfect candidate for a trofim. Because Yaakov is a very spiritual person, his neshama is connected to the higher worlds.
Dead or alive?
Dead. So he said, "I'll have him marry my daughters. I'll send him out to graze my sheep in the place." It was a very dangerous job in ancient times to be a shepherd because there were wolves. They were dangerous creatures. For sure, he'll get killed. For sure, a wolf will eat him up. And then I'll go out and I'll retrieve his skull, his head, and I'll use his head for my and add it to my trofim collection.
trophy
son-in-law.
Trophy.
A trophy son-in-law. This was his plan. Okay, he was no tzadik. And what did Yaakov do? What? Yes, a medrash. This was his plan. Okay, this was the shver. And what did Yaakov do? He turned the tables on him. Not only did he survive, not only did he take all his money, he also convinced the two daughters that I'm the real deal, not your father. Ad kidei kach, ein lanu chelik v'nachla beveis avinu. Rachel and Leah contributed to Klal Yisrael the rejection of Lavan. What is Lavan? So you can darshan many things, but I think for half, Lavan is materialism. Everything about Lavan is all money. It's all the akudim and the tuluyim. It's all about when Lavan came to greet Yaakov Avinu, what did he do? He kissed him. Where are the diamonds? Where's the money? Yishmael is an ideology. Esav is an ideology. They are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. We're familiar with, we understand Islam. Is Islam the descendants? Okay, we assume that the Yishmael has taken upon, the Arabs today have taken upon themselves the essence of what Yishmael is. We assume that the Christians have taken upon themselves the essence of what Esav represents. So what does Lavan represent? It really represents everything else. The pursuit of materialism. Not religious America. What is America today? It's a religious country. I don't get that sense. What?
A biased love of it. Why not?
You can't deny the fact that there is this pursuit. Lavan represents a person lives in this world. A person lives in this world to satisfy, to enjoy this world as much as possible. That's not Esav and Yishmael. Esav and Yishmael are religious. Yishmael, they live in tents. They live in refugee camps. They're not into Gashmias. They're not. This is not. You told me that in India. Okay, that's not. They're not real, real Muslims. They're not. Esav and Yishmael have to them a religious component which allows them to overlook Gashmias to some degree. They're willing to be moichel on Gashmias. They realize there are certain morals, there are certain spiritual pursuits that are worthy, and it's kedai, it's worthy to give up on some of the materialism in order to enjoy a degree of spirituality. It's a corrupt form of spirituality, but there is a degree of spirituality. That corrupt form of spirituality is what they use to attack us. They're jealous, they realize. But Lavan, it's all money. It's all money. It's all materialism. Rachel and Leah succeeded in adding to Klal Yisrael, being the mothers of Klal Yisrael, in Lanu Chelik V'Nachla. We don't want this for Klal Yisrael. It means absolutely nothing. It's just a tool to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bikurim is all about Rachel and Leah. Bikurim is when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you come to the Nachala. You come to the Nachla. That's the key word that's used by Bikurim, that's not used by the Melech. It's Nachla. Nachla, we have no chelik the Nachla in Beveis Avinu, where we come from, but instead, Eretz ki loivosem an ota el hamanucha v'el hanachla. Eretz Yisrael. It's not just about Eretz Yisrael, it's about the rejection of materialism. What are Piros? Why do we need Rachel and Leah and the rejection of materialism for the mitzvah of Bikurim? What is Bikurim? Bikurim are the Piros. What are Piros symbolic of? Gashmias. Piros are pure luxury. If Hashem would not have created the Shiva Saninim. Okay, we need wheat. Okay, we need bread. Okay, we need chita usa'ira. But what would have been if there would not have been figs and dates and grapes? Can the world survive? Absolutely. There are many people today that don't. That what?
You're making
it. Rekinishon, Chamar Medina. Okay, you don't need. You don't need. God, you don't. Peros represent luxury. It represents. It's a muscle for spirituality. When a person comes to Eretz Yisrael, and he comes to the Nachala. He comes to the Chelik V'Nachla that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given Klal Yisrael. And now you bring the best of the Gashmias that Eretz Yisrael has to offer. Who do we need? Which of the Imahos do we need to focus on when we make this presentation? Sarai and Rivka? No, we need to focus on them. We need to focus on Rachel and Leah. Because here is the danger. Here is the moment in time where we have our Nachlan Eretz Yisrael, our land. We have the Peros, the Shevach of Eretz Yisrael. Maybe we should enjoy it for its own sake. We need to come on to Rachel and Leah. Ein lanu chelik v'nachla beveis avinu. Love on our father. It's all about money. It's all, we don't want nothing to do with this. It does say by Kisava Nava. That's where it says. That is why the declaration is bidafka. Everyone is asking. Arami oivet avi. You want to go talk at Jewish history? Go pull out the encyclopedia. Go pull out all the books. We can go give you a whole long story of Jewish history. Arami oivet avi. Bedafka. Now is the danger. Now is our Nachla and our Gashmias, the Peros, with all that it represents. We can get swept away. No. Sarai rejected Yishmael. It's our land. It's our land. Esav, Rivka rejected Esav. Okay, we have to put all the pieces together. But what's important to focus on now is Rachel and Leah rejected Lavan. Lavan is all about kissing you to find the diamond. It's all about Mom and the Gashmias. We're not bringing the Peros with a machshava of Gashmias. We're bringing the Peros with a machshava to use the Gashmias to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu better. And it's also for this reason, perhaps we can say why it's a family mitzvah. The samachta b'chol hatov asher berach asher nosam l'chashem lokecha uleveisecha. Why all of a sudden are we focusing? Who's the bias? The bias is Ein bayis ala isha. Why are the bayis? Rachel, because we're dealing here with the Noshim. It is the Noshim, Rachel and Leah, who built the pasuk in Nishaya. Rachel and Leah, asher banu espes Yisrael. They are the builders of Klal Yisrael. They're the ones who built Klal Yisrael. And nailed the whole mitzvah bikurim is a mitzvah of Rachel and Leah.
And maybe you have the answer whether a woman's
Yeah, halacha doesn't always follow drush. Heiluchot v'heiluchot. It's okay, it's an idea. Okay, let's talk about the brachas, a few more short things. Okay, let's talk about the brachas and Okay, here's a var I came across. I don't remember where I saw this. The difference between the brachos and the klalos. When we begin the brachos, we have a list of brachos. Baruch atah b'vayecha, baruch atah b'tzeisecha. That's the word of the last pasuk. Baruch privitnecha. There's the... Now the fruit of your womb, their children, giving you a bracha that you should have good children. Then we give a bracha, Baruch Tanacha u'mishartecha. What is Tanacha u'mishartecha? Rashi says Tanacha means your liquids. Your liquids, you're eating a basket, Rashi tu pshushim, u'mishartecha, your solids. Lashon of you put something in a sieve. It remains. That's what Rashi. Rashi refers to means your commodities, your parnasa. It's a general description. Blessed should be your assets. You have liquid assets and you have solid assets. Baruch Tanacha, your liquid assets, and u'mishartecha, and your solids. Where does this pasuk come? This pasuk comes after Hashem gave you a bracha for your children. First, it says Baruch Pri Vitnecha Fri Ad Masecha Ufri Vehemtecha Shigar Alefecha ViAshrei Senecha. Then it says Baruch Tanacha Mishartecha. When we go to the Klalos, V'Hayim Loisish V'Makol Hashem Lokech L'Shmaris Lasses Kol Mitzvaysav, the order is reversed. First, it says Arur Tanacha U'Mishartecha. And then it says, "Bar arur pri vitnecha fri ad masecha."
That doesn't punish the children. It goes first with the.
Okay, so first Hashem, you tell me, Alderch Pshat, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem goes in stages. Hashem first tries to give a person a reminder, and first takes a very part. That's the Pashat Pshat. Inachanan. Now the Rambam is well known for writing that a person who gets married before he has a parnasa is a tipish, because how could you possibly get married without first having the means to support a family?
Cola.
Problem is that in this day and age, not only from this day and age, from time immemorial, has been the minog where people, then this Rambam was not accepted as halacha. People, what?
Your grandfather used to talk about this Rambam.
So what do you say?
No, he just said, the minog olam is not.
It's like not this. Like this. Oh, Baruch Shekivanti. The minig olam is not like that. It's a pasha, not from today, from time immemorial. It's never been like this. People have not followed this. People, they risk it all. Love conquers all. They get married and then they figure out how they're going to make a parnasa. So, according to the Rambam, it's tipshus. It's foolishness. So I saw that in the Sholol Rav. Ki moitzei Sholol Rav. So he says there that it's a likud, and he explains there that that's really the difference between the bracha and the klala. In the bracha, in the bracha, the person is doing everything in the wrong order. He's ignoring the Rambam. He's first getting married, and he has children. The first thing on his agenda is to get married and to have children. So the first thing he wants a bracha for is Baruch Pri Vitnecha Fri Ad Masecha. Then he looks for parnasa, and he needs. So he has the liquid assets, the solids. He wants a bracha for the parnasa. So Hashem says, "Yeah, I'll give you. I'll help you out." Baruch Tanacha Mishartecha. In the klalos, we're describing the chacham. The klolos were describing a person. I'm not going to get married until first I have a good parnasa. I'm going to make sure I'm all set up. So first, I'm going to ask you for a bracha for my parnasa, and then I'm going to ask for good children, for a good shidduch and good children. So the pasuk here is telling you that when Hashem gives you bracha, you can do everything wrong, and you'll be blessed. Even though in the brachas, the person is a tipish, according to the Rambam. He's reversed, a tipish. He's coming to ask Hashem, I first need bracha for children, and then you ask a bracha for parnasa. Rambam, a tipish, the tipish. I want to give you bracha. Even if you follow a foolish lifestyle, when you're blessed, everything works out perfectly. But if a person, rachmana litzlan, is in the category, v'hoya im lois sishma, bekoil Hashem Elokecha, lishmar la'asayis es kol mitzvayisadich ha'koyisad ha'shanochim mitzavich ha'ayom, then even if you're the biggest chacham, and you follow the Rambam to the letter, and you first have parnasa, and then you look for children, aror, the parnasa is no good, and the children are no good. The ikar is to do what it says, to tishma, to listen to l'koil Hashem Elokecha. That's the ikar. If you listen, no matter what you do, you'll be successful. If you don't listen, no matter what you do, no matter what chokhmah you have, when you went to the best schools, the best business practices, the best employees, everything is the best. If you're not an erelch person, you do not matzachin b'inei Hashem, all the chokhmah will all come to nothing. Okay. Quick, an idea. This is an idea. I found this to be very interesting. That the Targum we have in the Teichacha two times. There were no deep idea. Just an observation. Just something to be aware of. There are two times it mentioned the concept of a meshuga, the hayisa meshuga. The hayisa meshuga mimarei einecha pasuk lamed aleph. The hayisa meshuga mimarei einecha asher tireh. And then back a few psukim before, it says in Pasuch of Zayin, Yakecho Hashem, the Pasuch of Ches, Yakecho Hashem b'shigoin u'v'ivoroin, u'v'simhoin levav. The word b'shigoin is the same, Gzuntad is the same exact sharish as the word v'hayisa mishuga. So the same word appears twice. Yet, the Targum Onkelis translates the word mishuga differently in both places. Back in Pasuk Chof Ches, it says, Yimchino Hashem b'taf shusa. He translates the word shigaon as a tipish, a fool. In Pasuk Lamedale, when it says, V'hoyisa mishuga, the Targum translates it, Usehei mishtati, a shaita. So there is a shaita and a tipish. What is the difference between the two? A shaita is a person that has no intelligence. He's institutionalized. He lacks knowledge. Complete. Does not have das. A tipish is a person that has intelligence. It's just he does not know how to make the right decision. He makes foolish decisions. If you can explain something to him, we discussed this and we learned in the Qalas. Right. You can explain to him and I'll get 100 on the exam, but when he has to make a decision, he'll make a fool, when he has to apply his knowledge, he makes foolish decisions. So the question is, why is it that in Pasuk Chof Ches does the Targum translate Yakech Hashem b'shigoin u'v'ivaron u'v'simum levav as a tipish, whereas in Pasuk Lamedalit it says v'yisra mishugam imarei einecha as a shaita? Now, I don't have any deep idea, but I think the answer is simple, because in Pasuk Chof Ches, what do we learn in Chof Ches? What is mentioned in connection with the word shigoin? Blindness. And simhon levav, and a heart that is in a fearful heart. What is a chacham? A zehu chacham haroye es hanoilat. When you don't see what's coming, if you don't see what's coming, you can't possibly be a chacham. The definition of a chacham is roye es hanoilat. So since the word shigoin is together is put in the context in the same sentence as ivoroin, as blindness, the shigoin means foolishness, tipshus. foolishness. Because if you don't see what's coming, how can you possibly make a good decision? I don't have the information I need to make the proper decision. But in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, we're describing Mimarei Einecha. You can see it. You see it. So if you see it, you should be a Chacham. So if, so how could the Pasuk then say Mishuga? Obviously it means that what you see is so frightful, is so terrifying, it caused the person, Rachman al-Islam, to completely lose his das. So there are two types of Mishugayim. There's a Mishugana midin Tibshus, and there's a Mishugana midin Shaita. A Shaita and a Tibsh. Okay, now there's another idea I want to bring out. Okay, there's a Rosh Tevas. Pasuk says, "V'hayu chayecha tuluyim l'cha mineged." Okay, your life will hang before you. Let me see if I can find the pasuk. You know where the pasuk is? V'hayu chayecha tuluyim l'cha mineged. V'fachadata. That's the very end. Okay, that's the very end. Okay, let me just jump down there. Okay, vayu chayecha tuluyim lucha mineged ufachadeta laila v'yoimam v'loy samin b'chayecha. So I saw in a sefer. The sefer is all about gematrius and rashi tevas. I'm not normally into this, but this one really caught my attention. What's the connection of ayuchayecha tulim lucha mineged next to the words ufachadeta laila v'yoimam? You'll be afraid at night and by day. So it says that the words v'hayu chayecha tuluim lucha mineged are rashi tevos chalomos, not in order. V'vav v'hayu chayecha, your life tuluim tes lucha lamed mineged. Those words, 1, 2, 3, those five words spell out, the first letter spell out chalomos, and basically what it's saying is you're going to have dreams. Frightful, horrifying dreams. And that's why it makes sense now when the Pasuk says, Umanela, if you're going to have very disturbing dreams, Ufachadita, you'll be afraid, Laila. You'll be afraid at night, because when do you have dreams if not at night? Okay, but I think there's something a lot deeper here. What do those words mean? Your life will hang in front of you. What is it? Everyone's life hangs in front of them. What's the meaning? No one knows what tomorrow is going to bring. That's the way life is. You have no idea what's going to be tomorrow. Everyone's life is tulis l'chavida. What is this, the toichacha? What are you going to say because it's worse? You don't know what's going to be. This is something you can apply to a regular person, every person. The answer is no. The answer is, what are your she'ifos, your chalomos in life? Every person has dreams. Dreams are synonymous with your plans, your goals. What do you look forward to? What do you want to accomplish with your life? A person who has a healthy outlook in life is not part of the Teichacha. But when a person's chaloimais, his chaloimais, his yearning are not proper, then Then it's a whole different type of life. A person's life hangs in the balance based upon what he yearns, where he wants to go. It's a very fascinating interpretation, because these words don't just talk about the Teichacha. They tell you, you have to make plans in life. You have to have dreams. And those dreams is what your life depends on. If you have dreams to accomplish, to grow, to achieve, then you'll get there one day. But if you're all dressed up with nowhere to go, then it's all over. Life is over. V'hayu chayecha tuluyos l'cha mineged is roshe tevas chalomos. Your life hangs upon your she'ifos and your chalomos in life. Rav Sorotsky says that, what is the role of a Rav? It is a murdik of art. Rav Sorotsky said, I went to an installation of a rabbi, So Rav Sirotskin, one of the Sirotskins was the guest speaker, so he said, Rav has to be like Doniel. Yosef said, Paro, it says, Vatipohim Ruchoi. His spirit disturbed him. Nebuchadnezzar, when he complained that he did not remember his dream, it says, Vatispoim, there's a double. Vatispoim, there's a double sof. So Rashi in comments, why was it that Nebuchadnezzar said Vatispoim and Paro only said Vatipoim? The answer is, Paro knew the dream. It's just that he did not know the interpretation. Nebuchadnezzar did not even know the dream. He forgot the dream. Daniel had to tell him what the dream was and then tell him what the interpretation of the dream. So Rav Sirotskin said the role of a Rav is to be like Daniel, not like Yosef. Every person, every balabos, every member of the community at one point in time in their life had dreams, had she'ifas to accomplish, to achieve great things. But as you get older, you get married, tzar gidl banim, tirdas ha'parnasa, you forget the dream. It's not just that you forgot you forgot how to achieve the dream. You forgot what your dreams were. A Rav has to remind a person of what their dreams were, to remind you of your childhood dreams. And then after they remind you of what your dreams were, they have to go to the second step and help you achieve those dreams. You have to be like Daniel to succeed in Vatispo'im. Remember what your dreams were once upon a time? Now you remember? Now let's go to the second step and achieve those dreams. Okay, the pasuk includes the very frightening pasuk, Tachas shelevatas l'shalkecha b'simcha uvitov leivav meiroiv kol. The whole Torah hinges on this pasuk. Everything depends. So I saw recently a Holocaust story. This is a very frightening. There was a person who was in the Holocaust, a survivor of the Holocaust. His life was on the line multiple times. He was tortured. I don't know his name. Maybe I don't even know if there was a name to this person, but it's a true story. One of the Gedolei Yisrael, he used to speak about this, and he was tortured and he suffered. And at the end of the war, miraculously, the Americans came to liberate the camp. And the person, when he realized after everything that had happened that he was going to live, that the Americans are here, the Nazis they ran away, that he's going to live, he was filled with incredible joy. Like, he could not believe the fact that he's alive, the simchas hachayim, that he's alive. They took him, one thing led to another, he came to America, he was a young man, and he became an extremely successful businessman. Became phenomenally wealthy. But he confessed at the end of his life that with all of his success, all of his wealth, he never, his whole life, had simcha like the simcha he had when he realized he was going to live. And at that point in time when he was going to live, he had absolutely nothing. Naked. He was lying there in this concentration camp with absolutely nothing, not a penny to his name, not even a clothing to cover his nakedness. But the fact that I'm alive, the simcha he had was so overwhelming, so full, he never forgot it. When he came to America and he set up a life for himself, and he had set up a business, he always said, Daiges, Misha yesh leimon eretz emosayim, competing with this competitor and that competitor and trying to make money, more money, that money, this agmas nefesh, that agmas nefesh. He never really had hanah in earning money. Nothing compared to the hanah he had at that moment in time when he realized that he's alive. Simcha is all relative to everything else in life. Tachas asher lo yavadas Hashem Elokecha b'simcha uvituv leivav meiroiv kol. Sometimes the simcha is just a very simple thing. Unfortunately, we overlook the simplest forms of simcha because we get distracted by the foolish narishkeits in this world. And that's a very frightening thought to focus on. Another just quick ha'ara about Tachas shelevad shelkecha b'simcha uvituv leiv is it's referring back to the beginning of the parasha, back to Bikurim. Bikurim is defined. The end of the parasha Bikurim, the parasha Bikurim concludes with v'somachta b'chol hatoiv. Those same three words. Simcha Kol Hatoiv. Hashem has given you and your family the Ger Yosam. What is Bikurim? Bikurim is you're in Eretz Yisrael. Hashem has given you the land of Eretz Yisrael. He's given you fruit. He's given all of the things that are included in the parasha of Bikurim. Tachas asher lo avadeto es Hashem elokecha besimcha uvetuv levav meiroiv kol. It alludes back. That's the end of this parasha, the end of the Torah. The parasha of Bikurim to some degree is a mitzvah which encompasses all of the various tahakaras hatoiv. V'yonisa v'yamarta, Rashi says, she'encha kofui toiv. This is something that a person has to focus on, the focus of Bikurim, and it is what the pasuk alludes to with the words v'samachta b'chol hatoiv. Okay, so I think we'll leave it with that, and we should remember that all of the brachas are really, the teicha is really just brachas in disguise.
Monday,
Mir Tashem, same time. Labor Day will be the same time. Have a wonderful Shabbos.